is Davin's Den.
All right, we are back. Listen to Davin's Den. But hopefully, you knew that. If you didn't, you're fucking stupid. How you like them apples?
All right. Nasty apples.
They are nasty, rotten apples.
They are tart.
But after my take on parades, you really should not be surprised.
Nobody's surprised.
I am trying to find comics in the news. That's what I'm looking for.
Oh, okay. Well, we're not in the news, but there's a comic right next to you. Is that what you wanted?
Fortunately, I found comics in the news.
Oh, good.
And now it's time for Comics in the News.
All right. So John Stewart made news last week. He's still making news. So let me give you some background about why John Stewart made news, and then we'll get into this. So John Stewart testified in Congress on behalf of the first responders from 9/11. Thousands of first responders and others who helped in the aftermath of the terror attacks are only now just learning that they are sick. The September 11th Victim Compensation Fund was created in the months following the attacks and was initially active for 2 years, paying more than $7 billion in benefits to people who died or were injured in the immediate aftermath. But first responders who spent weeks at the site breathing in noxious air clouds with debris from the collapsed buildings after New York and federal officials told them it was safe. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Really? Is it? Have since found debilitating illnesses and cancers festering in their bodies. Congress and President Barack Obama in 2010 agreed to pay their medical costs, reopened the fund to set aside $2.7 billion to pay victims just learning about their chronic health problems resulting from their work in 2001. In 2012, the government determined that cancers can be compensated as part of the fund. It wasn't nearly enough money, however, and in 2015, Congress added $4.6 billion in funding along with new controls and limits on some payments. Now the special master who administers the fund anticipates that total payouts for claims filed before the measure expires in 2020 could be far higher than the $11.6 billion if a current uptick in claims largely caused by an increase in serious illness and deaths continues. A proposal in Congress would permanently extend the victims' fund, but support for the fund is nowhere near unanimous. When the fund was reopened, for instance, 160 members of Congress... Get out now. You're going to cough in here. Get out now. Joe making a statement of his own.
Shut up.
If you don't know what we're talking about, really quickly, President Trump was giving an interview with George Stephanopoulos and the acting head of what's I can't think of the guy. The guy that's fucking in charge of things for him. Mick Mulvaney.
Chief of staff.
He started coughing because Trump was like going on about, "Oh, I'd love to give Congress my financial statement. If only I could." And you hear,
"Shut up."
which I think was Mulvaney going, "Shut up, stupid. Shut up. We're not giving them shit. What are you talking about? You know what ABC is? Knock it off." But Trump didn't get that fucking very discreet sign. So like, "Get out now. Get out. Should we take a second take?"
You ruined the take.
Like they're shooting a sitcom or something. Is my camera here?
Yeah, he was like, "You know what? You want me to do that again?"
Fucking fantastic. So when Joe coughed, I chased him out like he was Mick Mulvaney and I was Donald Trump. Get out. You embarrass us all with your coughing. If you're going to cough, get out of here.
I think he's trying to save you from something, Davin. Is something wrong?
Think about sneezing. Like, don't show him the shit. Achoo.
Joe's got nothing. Is Timmy in the well? Is something wrong, boy?
Joe's got nothing to say. We're making fun of his president.
I know.
It was funny, though.
Yeah.
We'll carry on. All right. So it could be higher. A proposal in Congress will permanently extend the fund. But so, for instance, there's 160 members of Congress, nearly all Republicans, including current Vice President Mike Pence, who opposed it. So it did 42 senators. Their concerns were with the cost of the measure and how to pay out. They ultimately agreed for a less generous version of the Pekin law. All right, so let me make clear, first of all, let me go on. Not all Republicans oppose this, but the people who do oppose it are all Republicans.
Right.
So I don't want to so no Democrats are opposing this.
Hashtag not all Republicans.
No, not all Republicans are. But the people who are opposing it are Republicans.
Yes.
All right. So the national debt and government spending were much bigger issues back in late 2010 when Tea Party Fuhrer helped Republicans and Democrats House majority. Democrats regained control of the House this year. But even among Republicans, fear of government spending seemed quaint after GOP lawmakers passed a tax bill in 2017 that is projected to explode the budget deficit. That's happened. We have a record deficit now, and I guess we won't hear about that until there's a Democrat present. I guess
that's when it's going to come up.
It's amazing how deficits work, but whatever. Mm. The World Trade Center Health Program, the separate health care program related to the Victims Fund that's administered by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, was made permanent in 2015. It has documented the troubling increase in illnesses, including cancer. In July of 2011, it had identified just more than 56,000 first responders, volunteers, and others with health problems stemming from 9/11. By March of 2019, that number had risen to more than 95,000, with roughly 500 to 900 new cases being identified each month. The program has identified 2,355 deaths associated with 9/11-related health problems. That's nearly as many as died at the World Trade Center because of the crashes.
Right.
It's not really shocking when you think about how long those people were there and the work they were doing, what they were breathing.
No, and you know, just as a side note, I went in and drove as close as you could get with a car to the site not long after, to see what you could see. And I could see the twisted metal through the down the street between the buildings. And before we could even see the pile, we could smell it. And so just that toxic smell of burning rubber and burning and burnt metal.
There was also jet fuel, but yeah, still burning. There was fire.
I couldn't smell that, but I distinctly smelled burning rubber and burnt
where
metal.
If you were on the New Jersey Turnpike, you go, oh, that's normal.
And felt like a burning in my throat. We were like, well, we got to get out of here.
Yes.
You know what's the weird thing about that when they said that the air was safe? I'm like, could the air really be safe? And are they saying that knowing it wasn't? So if imagining saying if the air was toxic, what panic would ensue? And I'm not defending this.
Well,
I'm just, you know.
You might want to give the people working on the pile the equipment necessary to not breathe it in.
Because you're thinking about, and like I said, I'm not defending this, but you wonder what goes on behind
the
closed
door. You know, you raise an interesting point. There would have been widespread panic if you said Manhattan is under a toxic cloud.
Yes.
You know, wondering, because I'm like, how could they say that there is safe?
But also, give the first responders, the people, the firemen, the police, the EMTs, the reporters all down
they
there. Give them the shit that they need.
They might have said, you know what?
Just to be safe.
You know what? Because they might have said, you know what? A lot of people could die, but the panic that it would ensue and what it would do may be worse. And like I said, I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying that, you know, for everything now, the air is safe. Really? Is it?
But if they did that, think about what happened in Pripyat after Chernobyl. They put those people on buses and they got them the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay?
Well, chronic and debilitating problems with sinuses, reflux, and asthma are the most diagnosed ailments. But as of May, more than 12,500 cases of cancer had also been diagnosed. As of May, the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund had paid out 28,403 claims, totaling $5.2 billion in the 8 years since it reopened. There were 16,850 claims that hadn't yet been decided or were under review. The mean payment for a personal injury claim was $243,041.76, which is not a lot of money. While the mean death benefit was $678,484.33, according to data released by the Victims Fund. The proposal to permanently extend the fund would authorize it through 2089. It has plenty of support in the House, where it has passed the Judiciary Committee on Wednesday, but it's not clear if Republicans on the Senate would bring to vote. Now, the reason John Stewart has been advocating for this for years, back when he had The Daily Show, he would shame members of the Senate and Congress. He would show up with his fucking cameras and they would run.
Yeah.
So don't say John Stewart just doing this to get on TV. He's been behind this since day one. All right. It's the party you vote for more often than not. What do you think of the Republicans who don't want to fund these?
They're not wanting to fund this because, and I'm not saying they're right, they're wrong.
No, I'm asking you what your opinion is.
That they're being short-sighted. They should fund this.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. I want your opinion on it.
No, I'm sorry. Okay, no, I wanted to just explain, you know, be the devil's advocate there because they're not in the New York area and have no clue what it's like or what.
Well, that is an excuse.
And
use.
I'm not defending. And
I don't want you. I'm not asking you to defend. I don't want you to make an argument. Your opinion.
My opinion is these people went down there and they went on this pile and they're suffering. You know, they're suffering health related illnesses. There should be compensation for.
Well, you brought up something that has been an argument that John Stewart, which we'll hear from shortly, brought up, where people say it's a New York issue, it's a state issue. No, it's not. It's an America issue,
mm-hmm. Right?
You know, we were attacked as a nation. It's right. Not a New York thing. It's not a New York problem. It's America's problem.
Pearl Harbor was a Hawaii issue.
Well,
yeah. And, you know,
so they had it coming, being all paradise like.
Yeah, how dare you fucking dance around with your lays?
Yeah. Fuck you, people.
Yeah, with your grass skirts. You should have seen it coming.
Yeah. Aloha. Yeah.
You had it coming.
Pain in time.
How dare you? No, but that is so. If they were all right, so say there was and I don't know this, but I can't imagine any Republicans from New York would be against paying it. But say your congressman was against paying out on this thing. Your personal congressman, and would that be enough reason for you to vote him out?
It could affect that. But from what if I'm correct, what the problem has been is that this has been attached to a package.
That's Mitch McConnell.
Okay, and the whole argument is. Fuck the package, make it separate.
Yes, but that's Mitch McConnell. That's why it's been attached.
Well, yeah. And I'm not a
who I believe will go down as one of the great villains in political history.
Absolutely, we thought Cheney was a bastard.
You know, it's funny, and I'm just a real quick sidebar. You hear Joe Biden talking. He's the leading Democrat candidate right now. He's like, you know, once Trump's out of the way, we're going to be able to get things done with the Republicans, and I'm like, and negotiate. I'm like, or shame them. I'm like, fuck you, motherfucker. That ship. You want to do something? You got to get rid of Mitch McConnell. Why did John Boehner leave? Because he was in charge of Congress. He was trying to get shit done with Obama. And his caucus wouldn't get along. He was actually trying to be a politician and compromise. McConnell wants no part of that. It doesn't change when Trump goes. Yeah. So Biden is going to get his ass handed to him if he keeps on thinking that it's going to be like the 1980s with Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill, where you could actually get shit done and politicians gave a little from both sides so you could move the country forward. That ship has fucking sailed.
I really never liked Mitch McConnell. I really never liked him.
There's a lot that's alike. He's unpopular in his own fucking state. He's 33% in his own state. But whatever.
He's a stupor villain.
But I do think the Democrats should make more. I would make this more of a political fucking issue.
Yeah.
I would shame them. I go, listen. I would make the case. These people were the first ones who fought for America. Before we had military strikes, these people were putting America back together
they're
again.
They're missing a very good opportunity here. Get off the whole impeachment thing and then work on this and shame the whole party. Use your head. You know, because if you have that and go, the Republicans aren't funding this, what kind of it's going to stand more clout because if you're asking for impeachment, okay, it's still, to me, it's a sour grapes issue, okay? The election was 3 years ago. Get over it.
The president hasn't gotten over it yet either.
Yes!
And neither is Fox News. I mean, Fox News, they're still trying to fucking put Hillary behind bars. So yes, a lot of people haven't gotten over it. It's not just one side, though.
I understand that. All right, I'm not saying, but that's not the issue here. The issue is a missed opportunity by the Democrats.
Yes.
Where they could shame. And you know what? And like I say, sway me. Sway me.
Yeah.
That's my job. That's why I was hired.
Oh, God. Impeachment. Quit wasting your time with this bullshit. All right, let's go to this. You know, how come you're not passing it? How come? Well, it's part of a package. Let's get rid of it. Well, we don't want to get rid of the. Fuck you. Get rid of the package. God damn it. You're swaying me. You know? Right.
Well, how about not having pork belly items on every package?
Putting things together
as packages that are unrelated is bullshit.
Sometimes you have to play politics, but the Stewart, and I'm not a big John Stewart fan. I'm not a fan of his politics, but he brought up a lot of good points.
Well, let's hear from John Stewart. Let's hear from John Stewart, then we can talk about what he said.
All right.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
I want to thank Mr. Collins and Mr. Naylor for putting this together, but as I sit here today, I can't help but think what an incredible metaphor this room is for the entire process that getting health care and benefits for 9/11 first responders has come to. Behind me, a filled room of 9/11 first responders, and in front of me, a nearly empty Congress. Sick and dying, they brought themselves down here to speak to no one. Shameful. It's an embarrassment to the country, and it is a stain on this institution. You should be ashamed of yourselves for those that aren't here, but you won't be. Because accountability doesn't appear to be something that occurs in this chamber. We don't want to be here. Lou doesn't want to be here. None of these people want to be here. But they are, and they're not here for themselves. They're here to continue fighting for what's right. Lou's going to go back for his 69th chemo. The great Ray Pfeiffer would come down here, his body riddled with cancer and pain, where he couldn't walk. And the disrespect shown to him and to the other lobbyists on this bill is utterly unacceptable. You know, I would be so angry at the latest injustice that's done to these men and women, and another business card thrown our way as a way of shooing us away. Like children trick-or-treating, rather than the heroes that they are and will always be. Ray would say, "Calm down, Johnny, calm down. I got all the cards I need." And he would tap his pocket. Prayer cards, 343 firefighters. The official FDNY response time to 9/11 was 5 seconds. 5 seconds. That's how long it took for FDNY, for NYPD, for Port Authority, for EMS, respond to an urgent need from the public. 5 seconds. Hundreds died in an instant. Thousands more poured in to continue to fight for their brothers and sisters. Breathing problems started almost sick, they were crazy. And then, as the illnesses got worse, things became more apparent. Well, okay, you're sick, but it's not for the pile. And then, when the science became irrefutable, okay, it's the pile. But this is a New York issue. I don't know if we have the money. I'm sorry if I sound angry and undiplomatic, but I'm angry, and you should be too, and they're all angry as well, and they have every justification to be that way. There is not a person here, there is not an empty chair on that stage that didn't tweet out, "Never forget the heroes of 9/11, never forget their bravery, never forget what they did, what they gave to this country." Well, here they are. And where are they? And it would be one thing if their callous indifference and rank hypocrisy were benign, but it's not. Your indifference cost these men and women their most valuable commodity, time. Running out of script should be flipped. These men and women should be up on that stage. And Congress should be down here answering their questions as to why this is so damn hard and takes so damn long. And why, no matter what they get, something's always pulled back and they got to come back. Johnson, you made a point earlier, and it was one that we have heard over and over again in these halls, and I couldn't help but to answer to it, which was, you said, look, you know, you guys are obviously heroes, and 9/11 was a big deal, but, you know, we have a lot of stuff here to do, and, you know, we got to make sure there's money for a variety of disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, but this wasn't a hurricane, and this wasn't a tornado, and by the way, that's your job anyway. We can't fund these programs, you can. Setting aside that no American in this country should face financial ruin because of a health issue, certainly 9/11 first responders shouldn't have to decide whether to live or to have a place to live. The idea that you can only give them 5 more years of the VCF because you're not quite sure what's going to happen 5 years from now, well, I can tell you, I'm pretty sure what's going to happen 5 years from now. More of these men and women are going to get sick, and they are going to die. And I am awfully tired of hearing that it's a 9/11 New York issue. Al-Qaeda didn't shout death to Tribeca. They attacked America, and these men and women, and their response to it, is what brought our country back. It's what gave a reeling nation a solid foundation to stand back upon, to remind us of why this country is great, of why this country is worth fighting for, and you are ignoring them. You can end it tomorrow. Why this bill isn't unanimous consent and a standalone issue is beyond my comprehension, and I have yet to hear a reasonable explanation for why. It'll get stuck in some transportation bill or some appropriations bill and get sent over to the Senate, where a certain someone from the Senate will use it as a political football to get themselves maybe another new import tax on petroleum, because that's what happened to us in 2015, and we won't allow it to happen again. Thank God for people like John Field. Thank God for people like Ray Fiber. Thank God for all of these people who will not let it happen. They responded in 5 seconds. They did their jobs. Courage, grace, tenacity, humility. 18 years later, do yours.
All right. I thought it was worthy to play the whole thing, because I don't know if everybody heard the whole thing. You get snippets of it.
Right.
So, all right, before I played John Stewart, you were going to comment on what he said, so.
Yeah, the whole thing about it is is that he...
I'm not leaving the room.
No, what he was saying is that while they're sitting there waiting to find out about the funding, people are dying.
Correct.
And that's why it should be made separate, because one of the last things in the clip was how they're going over the, you know, how they're picking apart the bill, you know, because there's things that are around it. Make it a single bill. And while you're sitting there deciding, people are dying by the day.
Well, yes. just was it like today or yesterday, Mitch McConnell's like, you know, we'll get to it. That was pretty much what he was saying. Like, we'll get to it. Mitch McConnell has no fucking urgency with this shit.
He has no fucking soul. No,
did you have more?
No.
Yeah. So now here's the thing. About half the subcommittee is made up of 14 people. About half them were there for the whole time. You get marked present by being there for 1 minute. And then you get marked present. So that's why John Stewart was very upset. And Mitch McConnell's like, well, why is he upset? Well, you know what? These people deserve an audience. Mitch McConnell's argument is, well, you know, people are busy. Yeah, well, this is, as John Stewart said, this is part of your fucking job.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, We all got shit to do. Now, I will say this. I think a lot of these people who drape themselves in the flag, and we saw a lot of that after 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
And we still see that shit.
So, sure.
I think when push comes to shove, they're not very patriotic. They're self-serving motherfuckers.
Yep. Politicians, I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, man, I'm going to say that. I hope you give that some thought.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they like to surround themselves in stagecraft and pomp and circumstance and wear a little American flag. But I would argue that people like John Stewart, people obviously like these first responders, those are the patriots and the people that voted to push this through,
right,
are patriots. If you're voting against it or you want to attach it to something else, you're not patriot. You're just a scummy politician looking out for you.
What could you possibly be diverting the money to that's more important than protecting the people that protect us?
Well, the fever in 2010 was we got to worry about the budget. Now, we know this shit. The Republicans only give a shit about budgets when there's a Democratic president. We know this because our deficit is fucking exploding, and you don't hear about it from the same people that used to scream about it. It was the same thing. Clinton handed over a surplus. W handed... made it a fucking deficit to Obama. The shit was running off the cliff.
Yeah.
Obama, you know, they wouldn't give Obama what he needed to do for the stimulus. They gave him some of it because they were worried about deficits.
Right.
Donald Trump does not have nearly the things that Obama had to deal with when he came into office as far as the economy. He was given a good economy. You could argue whether it's better or worse under Trump one way or the other. But he was given a much better situation than Obama was given. Nobody could argue that.
Oh, God, yeah.
And now nobody talks about deficit. I guarantee you, because our deficit is exploding, if Trump goes down in 2020 and we have a Democratic president and a Republican Congress and Republican Senate, we're going to hear about it again.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that is why we couldn't do those things. Now, we heard the same things with Sandy. It's a New York, New Jersey problem. You know, it's a Connecticut problem.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, our senators and Congress people, pretty much whenever there's like a tornado or a wildfire or a hurricane in Florida, whatever, we're always like, yeah, we got to give them money. That's part of what you do. That's one of the reasons you need government, because
that is
people are wiped out. Government is supposed to protect us. Government is supposed to be the backup plan.
You know, for example, let's say that there was a bill for the Pentagon. For the people that were working at the Pentagon,
right?
I'm not going to sit there and go, well, that's a Washington D.C. problem.
Yeah,
that's we were attacked. The country was attacked. That's a country problem.
Yes,
right. Well, as we were saying while we were listening to it, one of the most poignant things he said was they didn't say death to Tribeca.
No, they didn't say death to correct.
To America. Yeah. And I mean, one of the things.
Although, if there was a pride parade, maybe they would have.
Well, now, one of the things that pulled us together as a country was the shock that we were being attacked. And, you know, Americans, if anything, are like, no, you're not.
Well,
we pulled together.
Yeah, because the country, we're like a bunch of Irish brothers.
Yes.
You know?
I don't remember being drunk.
We'll fight each other. We'll fight each other and punch each beat the shit out of each other. You fuck with it. You're done.
But that's not really what this country is.
When we're attacked, it is.
Clearly not. We're finding that out now.
When it was imminent, when it was right there. When it actually happened.
When it was fresh.
Wasn't that quaint?
Yeah, I know.
It fucking takes 3,000 people dying at once, as opposed to 3,000 people who rush to aid the people dying over time. Isn't that fucking quaint?
But
I'm not moved by that.
But originally it brought us together, okay? Now that it's been, you know... What, 19?
18
years.
Here's
the issue. The motherfuckers that are worried about a goddamn football player taking a knee because it's unpatriotic aren't fucking funding this.
Right.
It's the same. I can't
take
this.
It's hypocritical. Yeah, it is hypocritical.
I can't take those people seriously.
No, I can't either.
All right.
But with something like this, it is something that you could call them on.
I would.
You know,
I have.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, as a matter of fact, you could. I mean, with me, you know how my feelings are, and you asked me outright. Well, what do I feel about this? Let's say that I said to the contrary to that. You know, and then anything I said after that, you go, really, really? So you wouldn't give to this bill, but you're feeling that way? Are you really a true American? So you know,
I will say this: Donald Trump ends all Republican opposition if he goes, listen, I was there. We're not attaching this to anything else. Right. I want everybody to pass this thing. This thing floats through unanimously then. And that's all he has to do. Because we've found out the Republicans are not going to go after President Trump because they fear about their fear for their jobs of getting primary because Donald Trump is very popular within the Republican Party. Republican Party is a lot smaller than it was, but within the Republican Party, Donald Trump is more popular than Ronald Reagan was.
Stop right there. You know, we just discussed about 10 minutes ago where the Democrats are missing a great opportunity for optics on this. Excuse me. And after what you just said, the Republicans are too.
Yes.
It's amazing how both political parties are so intertwined into their agenda that they see a chance to do a great thing for the country and amazing optics going into an election cycle.
Yeah.
You wonder, where are they in the real world?
Well, you know what? I listen, we're very close to it because we live here. We saw it.
Yeah.
People we know died, responded.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's parts of the people in the country that feel differently than us, think it is a New York problem. And they're playing to their constituents. I'm sure that's out there.
And sometimes, you know, and believe, you know, and a lot of people out of the side of our area don't like New Yorkers.
I know.
You know,
I
so
know.
Maybe, but still, it's
Donald
American
Trump is
thing.
Missing an opportunity, but I've given up on Donald Trump seizing every opportunity that he could to turn some shit around and become a president of the people instead of the president of his base. But yes, Donald Trump could end all of Mitch McConnell's fucking foot dragging and nonsense and just come out when he goes to the helicopter and goes, and by the way, I know you're not going to believe this, but I agree with John Stewart 100% with this, which is something I've never agreed with him on anything. We got to get this done. I want it on my desk now. I live where this happened.
Yeah.
This is an American. I mean, Donald Trump, again. He's
from fucking Queens.
Again, he could do it. He won't do it. But Mitch McConnell's fucking wish-washy nonsense bullshit goes away if Donald Trump goes, no, I'm not standing for this.
So why don't you think Trump would do it?
Because he's self-absorbed in his own fucking day-to-day issues.
Yeah.
Donald Trump does not see past 2016. Donald Trump does not see past Russia. Donald Trump does not see past Sean Hannity or Laura Ingraham. And it's not playing on that network. You know, if Fox and Friends got on President Trump and go, hey, you know what, President Trump, really, you should get on this. If he saw it on Fox, if Sean Hannity started spitting it out on his show, Donald Trump would get his ass on board. That's why. Because Donald Trump is hailed as a political genius, and in some ways, sure he is. But in other ways, he's a political fucking moron.
Yeah.
Donald Trump would do a lot of good. Just like Donald Trump would have gotten very well if he would have taken the $25 billion the Dems were going to give him for immigration, and he would have gotten some of his wall funding if he wasn't listening to Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham. Mm-hmm. The guy misses opportunities all the fucking time to put things on the board, go, I got this done, not for my base, for my base and all of America. He misses those opportunities all the time. So, yeah, he's like a lot of politicians.
Democrats are missing it on this one, too.
Of course they are.
Yeah,
I call
are.
It, but I say the best thing that Donald Trump has going for him is he's running against Democrats.
Yeah.
that's
lucky
the
him.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. God forbid. And listen, I think some strong Dems are out there, and I think they're going to come through this. I think I don't look at Joe Biden as one of them.
Yeah.
I look at Joe Biden as part of the problem at this point. I mean, I like Joe Biden. He's fine. God forbid Trump would run. And I think they're out there. I think Pete Buttigieg is one of these guys. He's going to tell it like it is. I know you don't like her. I think AOC. Listen, there's a lot of things not to like. There's a lot of things to like. Say what you want about her. She fucking says it like it is. She goes after the president. I think there's room to where people go get on board with that shit. I think, and I've told you, Elizabeth Warren made huge mistakes by not going on Fox News because I think there's a lot of voters like you that would not look at her as the character with the awful beer intro and running thing and Pocahontas and that whole mishap and go,
yeah.
Oh, wait a minute, those policies make sense. Wait, she's talking about me.
The thing she's talking about, like, I'm middle class. That's all stuff that backs me up.
Yeah,
hey.
These banks are fucking screwing us. They screwed us once before. They're screwing us again. Hey, wait a minute. Why is President Trump under his administration allowing the kids to get screwed on college loans? That's my fucking kid.
Yeah.
We got loans up to the fucking hilt. My kid's going to be paying this off, you know, for the next 30 years. Mm-hmm. And now,
under like a mortgage.
Trump has rolled back the stuff that Obama put in to protect against the predatory lenders. That is the shit that Elizabeth Warren has fought her whole career for that would speak to the Trump voter.
Yes, it would. Absolutely.
You know, and she's showing a lot of people stuff because she's changing her game, her messaging now.
Yeah.
You know, and I've said it before. If she gets the election, if she gets the nominee, and I've always liked Elizabeth Warren, I know she's too left for some. That's fine. But I hope she uses the Bill Maher line, and when stupid calls her, and I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about Donald Trump, when stupid stupid calls her Pocahontas, I hope she uses the Bill Maher line and go, really, Brocahontas? You want to talk? I hope she does that. But whatever, that's off topic. Let's get back on the topic. So we all agree, John, we're all on John Stewart's side here.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay, very good. It's always absolutely nice when we all get along.
Well, no, as I posted, I go, I don't agree with his politics, but bravo, bravo.
I think Stewart has a lot of politics that you would agree with. I think he does. If you listen, now we all his politics aren't out there, but I think a lot of times he's against hypocrisy.
Yes,
which I think you would be for. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I mean,
hypocrisy.
No, I think
you like hypocrisy.
All right, then never mind. You won't like John Stewart. I take that back. I stand corrected.
Oh God.
All right. So Joe and I have often had the conversation on this show about what are comics. And you know, it's funny, I will say this before we get into this article on Salon.com, which is very liberal. So I'm going to say that when I read the article, it's very liberal.
Yeah.
Put that aside. It is very funny, though, how when people say, you know, entertainers should know their place. Comics should just shut the fuck up and tell jokes. Not too many people are saying that about Jon Stewart.
No.
No, we kind of need people like Jon Stewart who use their spotlight and power in a good way. I'm not saying preach to everybody. You know, preaching to the masses is never a good fucking thing.
No, but he's incredibly eloquent and well-read, and he cuts through to the point.
Yes.
Crystallizes people's ideas.
And the same thing with Colin Kaepernick. You know what? You might not like how he went about it. He did raise a good issue.
He did.
So next time you tell somebody who's using their spotlight to continue the public discourse, think about some of the ones who've done good things that you agree with.
But it's the whole thing. It's the whole thing with the traveling clown. Like I said, we're changing the world. Yeah, it depends on the venue. If you're in a nightclub and you're changing, you're not changing anything. You're entertaining drunks. So if you have that conviction, then go out and did what Jon Stewart did. Go out and organize and go to a town hall meeting. Take that. Don't be on a comedy stage. I'm changing the world. No, you're not changing shit. Take it off the comedy stage and be an actor. Take it into
Let me get into this article and then we can debate that. So this is from Salon.com. Like I said, it's very I'm going to read most of it. It's very left leaning, so they're pointing to a lot of anti-Republican stuff. Try to block that out of your mind for the purposes of this conversation. I'm not saying whether I agree or don't agree with that aspect of it, but it's irrelevant to the point I want to get to.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So since 9/11, comedians have increasingly worked to defend the values of our nation, oftentimes more so than politicians themselves. Typically, the role of the satirist is to call out the flaws in the system, to speak truth to power in a witty way, to expose hypocrisy and to mock hubris and folly. Stewart, when he hosted The Daily Show on Comedy Central, certainly did that and more. And today's legacy is what we have, a broad slate of sharp-witted satirists continuing the tradition. But something odd happened to satire in the United States after 9/11. Suddenly it was the court jesters who were taking on the role of defenders of our values and our court institutions. Sure, the comedians still made fun of the emperor with no clothes or the orange-faced president, but they did more than that. They became role models for engaged citizenship. They defended American values. They redefined patriotism. Satirical comedians who typically focus on questioning values and institutions rose up to protect them. Stewart has been recognized for the role that he played in mentoring a range of comedians, each of whom is using satirical comedy to elevate the national conversation. Stephen Colbert, Samantha Bee, John Oliver, Trevor Noah, Hasan Minhaj, and others all acknowledge his efforts to encourage and develop their work. But less attention has been paid to Stewart as a model American, to the way that he transformed political comedy in the United States from a source of critique to a source of patriotic leadership. Over the course of the years that Stewart hosted his show for Comedy Central, he did far more than serve as a voice of ironic commentary on national issues and political follies. He increasingly became an advocate for American values. While he regularly recognized the various ways the country had failed to live up to its ideals, he remained convinced that the goal was to keep striving to attain them. And he was especially committed to using those ideals to counter the fear-mongered, hate-filled, fact-averse vision of patriotism espoused by the far right and visible on Fox News and via pundits like Rush Limbaugh. So there's some of that right-leaning slant I warned you about.
Fact-averse.
Whatever, you know, it's irrelevant. In the post 9/11 days, Stewart was
I don't want to get him started. I want to get her started. Fucking story.
No, I mean, listen.
Okay, kids, settle down.
I don't want to.
He's like looking at us both at the cross of his eyes.
Don't get it.
What am I going to do?
Let me get through this.
You want me to debate the worth of Fox News?
He's like, no. Got two Dobermans, and he's dangling meat. I just got to wave the meat. Just
sit.
And yet you both speak when not asked to. Bad dogs. And even the frog knew to dummy up, and you two didn't. There was a frog outside making a ruckus.
It was so loud.
We're getting into this heavy political thing. Hey, fucking frog.
Well, he dummied up. You two and Mick Mulvaney don't know when to shut the fuck up. The frog does.
Put the frog in charge.
This sounds
it's not out of the question.
Yeah, he's
you think you can woo me over with a green frog colored shirt? Now I know the difference.
He's fourth,
frog,
Mike.
I figured I'd get on your good side.
Sure. Didn't work. In the post 9/11 days, Stewart was not alone in this mission. He was accompanied by Stephen Colbert, who hosted the Colbert Report for Comedy Central in the time slot after Stewart. Colbert appeared in character as a bloviating pundit. It was basically a takeoff of Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
But central to the character was the way that Colbert mocked right wing versions of patriotism that are more bluster than substance, swooping in the back of a bald eagle during the opening credits to his show and then sitting behind a desk surrounded by Americana. Colbert mocked the way that the right had co-opted the American idea of patriotism, but both Stewart and Colbert worked to expose the hypocrisy of the right, which often imagined itself as the nation's true patriots. That's true. They did take patriotism. Looks like they take religion before that.
Yes.
They're very good at marketing, the Republicans. Democrats, not so much.
Yeah, well, because they're
nobody wants to market a pussy hat.
there are too many different factors. They're like Protestants. There's too many flavors.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
Oh, well, there's Catholics, Jews, Protestants are like everything in between.
Either you're team Jesus or you're not. That's as far as I go.
Okay.
Yeah, that's as far as for the purposes of this conversation.
Okay.
But the key is that team Jesus or not team Jesus. Yeah. But the key is that they did more than just expose hypocrisy and question hubris. They actually engaged in various efforts to strengthen democratic institutions. Stewart championed legislation to support the needs of the 9/11 first responders. Colbert too testified before Congress in 2010 on behalf of the migrant labor. Stewart and Colbert held a rally together on the National Mall in advance of the 2010 midterm elections. That event focused on the fact that the nation was suffering under the weight of the right-wing divisive rhetoric, and they argue that citizens need to fight to champion U.S. tradition of reason debate. Colbert also ran for president twice. Why not? Anybody can. In an effort to expose the undemocratic nature of our campaign finance laws, Stewart and Colbert used their satire to offer a different version of patriotism, one that is compassionate, reason, democratic, and just. This all set the stage for the work that political comedians are doing today in the era of Donald Trump presidency, where the disconnect between the slogan Make America Great Again and the administration's dehumanizing policies feel like a sick joke. If patriotism under George Bush seemed like a sad performance, then under Trump it has become a charade. Think, for example, the time George W. Bush appeared in flight uniform behind the banner reading Mission Accomplished in a far-from-stable Iraq. Yeah, that was fucking stupid. Then the combat...
He even admitted it to
did
it.
Did he?
Yeah.
He's like, that was premature.
Too soon! Too soon! Let's put me back in the plane.
He goes, then, but yeah...
Oops.
Yeah.
Then compare that to the Donald Trump administration requesting that the USS John McCain be hidden from view during the president's trip to Japan. They are both egotistical insults to those who fight to defend our nation, but one is simply absurd and petty. Anyway, so just as we have transitioned from Bush's performed patriotism to Trump's farce, we can note the rise in comedians stepping up to remind the nation of our values and our democratic institutions. In the wake of the tragic events in Charlottesville during the Unite the Right rally that led to the murder of Heather Heyer, Seth Meyers reprimanded President Trump on what it means to be a leader. In response to Trump's repulsive all sides have some blame comments, Meyers stated, "You can stand for a nation or you can stand for a hateful movement. You can't do both." Oh, Nazi Germany begs to differ. Anyway, both Hasan Minhaj and Michelle Wolf schooled the Trump team on the First Amendment when they hosted the White House Correspondents Association dinner in 2017 and 2018, respectively. I will note that on those episodes, Joe was on the side of the comedians. He was not on the side of the right wing for
that's
that.
That's true.
Because they were objecting to the material.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I was giving you solid there. Don't fuck it up.
I'm not fucking it up.
I'm just warning you.
I'm prepping. I'm interrupting. It's prepping.
I didn't say interrupt. I said don't fuck up.
Oh, all right.
Interrupt, fine. Don't fuck up. John Oliver regularly uses his show on HBO to educate his audience on major issues of significant public interest. And who could forget Jimmy Kimmel's turn from goofy frat boy humor to emotional champion for universal health care? A move that underscores the way that even the most unlikely comedians are advocating for policies to benefit our nation. In fact, the examples of the ways that comedians are serious about defending national institutions and committed to advancing national ideas abound. This uncanny tradition where comedians don't just mock institutions, they actually defend them, has happened for a range of reasons. But one thing remains clear. The public trusts comedians often more than politicians or the press. And they also learn more from them. This is why Stewart's appearance at the Capitol on behalf of the 9/11 first responders simply confirms the fact that it is regularly the case that political comedians take our national values more seriously than our politicians. What should really anger us is the fact that we live in a nation where comedians defend our national heroes more vigorously than our politicians do. Very interesting. But is the article correct in noticing a difference in how after 9/11 the role of comedians changed and how America looks at them? Is that accurate?
I don't know that that's necessarily accurate, because I think that we've been looking at satirical comedians and satirical cartoons in newspapers.
True.
For the entire time that we've been a country.
Lenny Bruce certainly furthered
George Carlin.
I don't know. Well, George Carlin was
George
just
Carlin
a comic.
Not as political,
Carlin,
but
Carlin
he...
was a Carlin was a disciple of Lenny Bruce.
Yes,
and Carlin was a straight laced comic.
Yeah,
and with the Vietnam War mm-hmm. and everything going on, he just could not be straight laced anymore, and he decided that he was part of the culture,
counterculture. Right. But he kind of stayed in his lane. He kind of stayed as a comic. He kind of went to jail for it. Will Rogers, somebody pointed out to me.
Yes, that's a good point too.
So it has been there, but it is very interesting that comics are coming to the fore, and I do think people trust comics more than they trust politicians in the press, which is why I would push back to you, Joe. Go, we are doing stuff, because I find very often I'm making people aware, yes, in a humorous way, because I don't get up there and preach.
Right.
I am making people, because not everybody is as tuned in to the news as we are.
No, no.
All three of us are fairly aware of what's going on a daily, if not a weekly basis,
right.
Whereas our audience is not. So I'm bringing issues to light. Would I like to go into them more like I do on this show? Sure. But as Joe would say, there's a time and a place. But I do think... That we can make people aware of some of the nonsense that they are unaware of, because they are tuning out the media and the politicians.
And they have done for quite a long time, because I think that just like modern life is very is oppressive in the fact that there's just like this constant stream of information and experience and you got so much going on that people have backed off. I mean, I was actually one of the people that kind of tuned out politics for a while because it was just overwhelming. But now that I'm much more attuned to it,
I'm much more outraged.
Yeah, become radicalized.
Well, you know what? When your guy's in office, you don't pay much attention because everything's good. When your guy's not in office, you pay attention because you're outraged.
Yeah,
that's the way it is.
It's true.
Both sides do it. I'm no better than anybody else.
Yeah, but some people are outraged without actually being attuned to the things that are actually happening and being said.
Well, this is true.
And I think that because people are exhausted, they're like, I got work, I got kids, I totally get that.
Which is why I think that we have an opportunity as entertainers to make people aware.
Cut through the bullshit.
But these
are the problems.
But the thing about it, and I still stand by my whole traveling with the traveling clowns, is, yeah, in a nightclub we go in, we talk about politics. Are we making people aware and we're making change? No. We're just the entertainment for that night.
See, I disagree, because I have so many conversations with people that are the opposite of me politically after shows, you know, just, you know, at length by the merch table or at the bar, just talking about things. Oh, I didn't know about that. I go, well, what do you think about this? And they'll say, like, oh, I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's impactful.
But after that, they go home and you go back to your room, and that's the end of it. Now, with that in mind, you get people like Jon Stewart. If you want to make a difference and do that, you really need to take it like Jon Stewart, where he goes out and, you know, he makes his comments on his show. He makes awareness on his show. However, he goes into front of Congress and he uses the tools of a comic
mm-hmm.
off the stage, out of the club, off the TV show. And he is using those tools of a comic. Courting hypocrisy, taking a comic's job is to take the curtains of bullshit and rip the fucking curtains down.
Yeah.
And that's what he was doing. And he was calling them out on it and like a comic. So my whole thing is a context thing. In a context of going into a club and all right, you're a traveling clown, you're saying what you're going to do, that's nice. But in the context of having that conviction and taking that conviction further,
yeah,
to make a statement at a town hall meeting, at a school meeting, at something like that, that's when
that's
a
next
comic
level.
Can make, but that's my opinion. Where a
but I think you are I think you're with that. I think you're dismissing the fact, and I agree with this, that people don't really trust politicians or the media anymore. People do. I think because we're vulnerable up there, and we're not some corporate based thing with some. I mean, most of us don't. Our agenda is to make people entertain. At the end of the day,
well,
they trust us more.
But in that way, we're not accountable to comics. Have the reputation of not being accountable to any one thing.
Well, I think, and I think that just makes our word even more, because we're not accountable. Nobody's paying us to say these things.
Right.
You know, we're saying these things because this is what we believe. You could agree or not agree, but they go, all right, well, this is what he believes, and this is why. Maybe he says it in his
act. But in the arena of an entertainment complex, you know, you're there and you're making your points. We both do make our points. But, you know, people are there. They just want to hang out and have a good time. We'll have a little chat at the end of the show, and we move on. We're not changing the world. My whole thing is, if you feel that you want to change the world, then go out and change
the
world.
Well, here's my pushback. Our pal, Dave Daugherty, the police officer who's been on the show a bunch of times. I met him. He saw me perform a Catch a Rising Star at Princeton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have police. I talk about the police in my act and everything, and I probably mentioned the scammer shit. We got to talking after the show, and then he became a friend and became on the show. So it does impact people when you do talk about things. When you when people do see you as somebody of value,
mm-hmm.
when they value what you're saying, not that they agree with you,
no, not necessarily,
but they value you as a human being.
Right,
there is that opportunity to stick with people. I've had people say things to me after shows that stick with me.
Yeah.
That's, so I think it diminishes it. What I would compare today's comedians to is to the 1960s musicians. Because it was real. Because when the shit was hitting the fan and nobody trusted the politicians and, you know, the media was what the media was. I mean, listen, the media was a lot more trusted then than it is now.
Sure. But and they deserved it.
But it was the musicians that were reading people, that were reaching people that would normally tune out.
Yeah.
It was the musicians who were screaming out, hey, what's going on? What's going on? Look around.
Yeah.
People are, you know, we have the Kent State.
Yes.
You know, we got Vietnam.
First thing I thought of, yeah.
I mean, so, and I think in that way, and I don't think, and we looked at those musicians now, whether we like what their songs or not, with reverence. Mm-hmm. We didn't look at them as traveling clowns. I think a lot of these comedians, 30, 40 years from now, will be looked at with reverence.
I agree in one part. I do think that a lot of the musicians of the time have been quoted saying, did we change things? Not necessarily. They didn't change the course of the events, but they did make people more aware.
But that
of
changes
what those
things.
Were.
You're making people aware. Who can? You make enough people aware, things change.
Someone's going to be influenced
right.
enough to actually
listen.
Like,
listen, nobody's gonna nobody's gonna storm the Capitol because of a fucking joke I have.
Right.
But
no.
Well, they should. But they should storm the stage too. But if you make enough people aware, that can affect how people fucking vote.
Yeah.
And those musicians affected how people voted. How people, because people turned on that Vietnam War.
Yeah, they did.
You know, people weren't always against the Vietnam War. Now, unfortunately, they turned on it so much that when our soldiers came home, they turned on them too.
Yeah.
That was fucking wrong.
Right.
But musicians helped fucking change it because you were reaching people that wouldn't normally be engaged, that would have just tuned it out as fucking noise.
Or maybe they were upset about it, or like I said before, you know, sometimes it crystallizes people's thoughts.
People can't think that way.
You
go, yeah, I think that way.
I don't know in that era if it would have been tuned out. I mean, you know, you've got your schoolmates going off to war and not coming back.
Here's that.
You can't. You know, and
but you know what? In this era, for
that affected everybody.
For 18 years, for 18 years, people have seen their schoolmates going on to war and counting. You know, since 9/11, people's schoolmates have gone to war.
Not in the same way it was Vietnam.
Well, because there was a draft.
There was a draft. So.
But still, people's schoolmates are going to war.
Sure.
Yeah, but the thing, the difference is that it. The now people's schoolmates are going to war. Chances are they are going to come back home.
But back then,
the way
and
that war
and every
was
guy
going,
had a draft number.
You know,
that
yeah,
really it, brings it fucking home.
So for people not to be as in tune, they were pretty damned well in tune. You had two things playing. You had the counterculture that said, well, we have to have war and blah, blah, blah. And then you had these kids that their friends were dying and stuff like that. And with that, you had the music of the era, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and all them playing
Dylan.
To these kids. Dylan playing to these kids. And it's not something that they were on a platform. It was something on a platform that they were saying, but it was what these kids were experiencing.
Yeah.
At
yeah.
the same at the same time,
they
you
were
know?
Much more on a personal level.
Yeah,
like a day to day level.
Yeah, and a day to day. I remember as a kid, watching the casualty reports on the news.
Yeah,
and I was six, you know, but still, you knew what it was.
We watched the news on TV while we ate dinner.
Yeah.
You know?
So the article makes it seem like comedians are pushing back against the right wing, and it's solely right wing that's changing America in a negative way. I agree with that. I think good comedians, and they also happen to be liberal most of the time, I find, are pushing back against the ridiculous left wing. I find Bill Maher, who's known as a liberal comedian, very often pushing back against the nonsense that liberals will spout.
He's starting to do a lot more of it.
He always has. You're just noticing it
not
now.
Not as much. A lot more of it. It's not, yeah.
Well, because it's getting worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
But yes. Right,
fine.
But he's also pushing. But I always wonder. It's the liberal comics that are doing it. I can never think of conservative comics that really go out there on a fucking limb and rail against the machine. I guess because they are the machine. I don't know. Really hard. I mean, but the closest we had was Nick DiPaolo whining that nobody can make fun of AOC, and I said, "Fucking do it, Nick.
Yeah.
You can want." It's like they're fucking.
You be the trailblazer, though.
You know, you have Jerry Seinfeld, who I think is a liberal, fucking railing against colleges and political speech. It's always the liberal comics doing the railing against the right and the left. Where the fuck are the conservative comics railing against the machine?
I rail against it.
I find that very often, don't take this the wrong way, very often when it comes from conservative comics, when they're railing against something, it's more often, get off my lawn, you kids, today. But I don't think that's the machine. That's just being the old fuddy-duddy. Not that you're an old fuddy-duddy, but it's always like, you know, the problem, when we were kids, as opposed to taking on the people of power.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, it seems more like it's a concession. Okay, that really was too far, or that was ridiculous. But not as much, you know, really fighting back. I think that the right is more. This is the left's fault. There's a lot of intelligentsia who are on the left. However, there's so much navel gazing that they're not getting things done. And the right is used to like bulldozing their way through. Just do it, punch through. And it's like that's not necessarily that they have the best ideas or the best policies. It's just they're a lot more. You know, they've got their shields up and they're.
No, the
right's battling
the right's much better getting shit done.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is,
which is unfortunate.
What I'm saying is, it would be nice to see somebody like Bill Maher. And I don't love his stand-up comedy. I like his show.
Yeah.
Who's willing? I'd like to see more people take on both sides.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a very uncomfortable place when you're making sure that nobody's comfortable, and that's what Bill Maher does. He gets it from the left and the right
because he doesn't care.
And that's kind of what I try to do.
Yeah.
Not on the same level as Bill Maher. I don't have the platform he
right,
has.
Right.
But I'd like to see more. Of that.
Who was the last name is Miller, the guy that used to do the
football. Dennis Miller.
Dennis Miller and Bill Maher went out a couple of times and had debates, and I would love to see those two.
But I feel like Dennis Miller never really took on the machine.
He was droll and sarcastic, but
you
he
can
really
be,
didn't
but that's
punch.
His style.
Yeah.
But I mean you could be droll and sarcastic and take on the machine.
Sure you can.
And take on the machine from both sides. Both sides have a fucking machine.
Yeah.
You know, listen, the left certainly has a fucking guilt complex working.
Yes.
But the right also subscribes to that too when their little feelings get hurt too.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see people take on both sides.
What do you mean a guilt complex? Like they're like feeling bad about their behavior because
no,
I don't see that.
No. The left wants everybody to apologize for everything.
That's why
you got a guy like Beto O'Rourke who is running for office, running for president, a liberal who I can't take fucking serious because every time I turn around, he's fucking apologizing. Shut the fuck up. There are things to apologize. Listen, for me, there's a happy medium between Beto O'Rourke who apologizes for everything and Donald Trump who apologizes for nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
I think if you're a fully functioning adult human being, there is something going, you know what, I was wrong there.
It gets to the point where they're over apologetic. It seems disingenuous.
I just don't feel like they have. I don't know what they stand for. Right. If they're always apologizing.
Right, exactly.
And if you apologize for nothing, I don't think you're a fully evolved human being.
Right.
Because none of us are perfect.
No.
But I would like to see more people occupy this. What?
It got so bad that Obama was saying that.
He's right.
I know he was. I'm not damning the man.
But I'm saying what?
Because it got to the point where everybody had, you know, skeletons in their closet. And somebody would say that. Obama came out, I think, about 6 months ago. I was like, look, everybody's got a little southern. Everybody got to fucking relax.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
Because it was happening a lot on the left. It started happening on the left.
What the right was good at doing with Obama is they made him into this character of on the apology tour, which wasn't what he was doing. He felt there were some things as America that we did wrong. And you know what our history has? It's a fucking checkered history. There's nothing wrong with it. You don't apologize for everything.
No, but the thing is, we have done egregious things around the world as a country. We absolutely have.
Yeah.
Our foreign policy is littered with skeletons and dirty
deeds. You can apologize for shit that's genuinely wrong, I don't look at you as weaker. I look at you as stronger. All right.
Absolutely.
We did this wrong. We're going to do better next time.
Own it.
That's striving to make America great. Forget about the again.
Own it and do better.
Right. So, but whatever. I'd like to see. I think there's a happy medium. I think Bill Maher, as far as comics, happens to be somewhere on that happy medium. Listen, he's going to go after the right a lot more than he's going to go after the left. But you know, he goes after the fucking left too.
But when he sees something on the left,
I tell you, lately, I have more respect because he has been going after the left a little bit more than usual.
Because he's tired of the bullshit. Also, he's fucking.
Answer that question. Yes,
problem with Bill Maher is, and I put this on Facebook. I remember Bill Maher's in his 60s now. I remember when John McCain was running and Bill Maher was in his 50s. Bill Maher had a fucking plethora of jokes about John McCain being old. Jokes I never really particularly enjoyed.
No, ageism isn't cute.
No, now that he's older, he's like, I guess ageism is the last thing you could do. Why is everybody picking on people for being old? Shut up, Bill.
Shut up.
I've been watching you for over a decade. You fucking hypocrite.
Well, yeah. He's a hypocrite.
And you're not going to stand for a hypocrite.
You aren't getting away with that.
But, in a sense.
Don't you have a cough?
In a sense, it's calling. He should be calling the moment. Come out and go, you know, I said a lot of stuff.
But he hasn't owned that.
But that's being a hypocrite, you know, where you can
go. Or a hypocrite,
where you can go, I goofed on McCain. He was getting, you know what, not so much anymore.
Yeah.
Call the moment.
He's not doing
that.
That's my problem with Maher. He's not doing that.
Well, that was my problem with Louis C.K. as well when he's making the comeback. He's not calling the moment on that. He's trying to gloss it over.
He's not taking ownership and moving on past it. Nobody can move on past it because he has not taken ownership of it. Or he does it in such a snide fucking way like, yeah, I did it, so what? No, you don't get a pass. And you haven't learned your lesson.
Yeah, like I said, I like his material, you know, and stuff like that. But that's if there's one critique that I do have of him, he should be calling the elephant in the room. That's what a comic does.
The hours are getting late, so I want to go through these next two stories quickly. They're important enough to cover tonight.
Okay, and Zoom.
So we're going to get through quickly, make our points, and move on. We gave a lot of attention to the comic in the news because
that's what we do.
Right. So there is a new state law in New York. Amid an ongoing measles outbreak, New York is requiring school children to be vaccinated, even if parents have religious objections. Governor Andrew Cuomo signed legislation Thursday that removes non-medical exemptions from school vaccination requirements. The law goes into effect immediately. The move comes despite opposition from anti-vaccination activists and religious freedom activists. So New York now joins California, Mississippi, West Virginia, and Maine.
What a group.
Yeah.
What a strange group.
Sounds like something in a trivia question.
It does. Like states you would never put together.
States that have nothing to do with each other.
States that all said their favorite ice cream flavor was sassafras. I mean, you'd never guess this. You would never fucking guess this.
Laugh stupid. That's funny. Well, laugh anyway. It's funny. Trust me.
And I know funny. It had K's in it. I don't know. I don't know. Wait a second. Joe's girl says she can't hear you.
Can't she hear me?
I don't know.
Tell her. No, my mic is on. Let's see.
Okay, maybe. Joe's girl, can you hear him?
Everything is working properly. Let's see. Hold on.
Okay. Did it work? Stop that. Hit. Oh, it's working.
Check. Yeah, I'm registering. All right. Maybe she
heard. She heard static, and then you went off.
All right, so tell her to log out and log back in.
Okay.
That would be the best thing to do. And we shall continue. Thank you, Joe's girl. We shall continue.
She's our tech support.
Okay. Yay.
We need it. But yeah, I'm registering.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine now.
Okay. Let's see. So basically, this is about the measles outbreak, which has really hit the Hasidic community in New York.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is about. So he said, "While I understand and respect freedom of religion, our first job is to protect public health, and by signing this measure into law, we will help prevent further transmissions and stop the outbreak right in its track." Cuomo signed the bill immediately. We're dealing with an emergency. I'm just trying to skim through this.
Yes.
New York has become the epicenter of the measles outbreak. There's been 1,022 measles cases confirmed in 28 states. Let's see. So this is so basically that's what's going on. We're now countering not only the vector of measles virus, but we're countering the vector of anti-vaxxers in that message. That insidious message is just challenging as the most contagious virus on the face of the earth. All right. So I like the law.
I do, too.
I do, too.
Okay, good. We all agree.
he made a very good point where there are certain cases, yeah, there is freedom of religion, but you have to, in instances as this, you have to override that due to the public health
Absolutely.
Of the masses. I'm sorry. This actually has to override
yeah.
that.
So we all agree that health is more important than religious freedom.
Yes, when the health of religious freedom obviously is a right, but when the health of the masses mm-hmm. is at jeopardy over that, the health of the masses has to override that.
Now I agree with you, but we must take a look at the slippery slope. I thought of some scenarios where, you know, it's not too far fetched that this could go too far. You know, like I could see a law where abstinence, birth control, or condoms are mandatory for unwed couples. I could see that.
It's not a public health issue.
She's right.
Well, all right. We'll take you back to the 1980s. We'll mm-hmm. make this one a public health issue. Well, AIDS was all the rage. All the cool kids were getting it.
Right, right.
But no,
nothing but broth and bathrobes.
Yeah. Shout out to my cat, Moo.
Yeah. And I'm Yaho.
So there was a raging epidemic. We really didn't know much about it. We had a lot more rumor than we did fact.
Yeah.
And it was spreading. And it was fucking scary.
And we didn't know how it was spreading, really.
I mean, it's not far-fetched to see that a more overreaching government could have banned homosexuality in the name of public health. Because people thought if you were gay, you were going to get AIDS, you were going to spread AIDS. Just by sitting on a toilet. That was out there.
Yeah.
So if a gay guy sat on a toilet, and then you sit on that toilet, you could get AIDS. In the name of public health, it's not far fetched.
But in a sense, there was actually clear heads were prevailing back then as well.
And it was
not far-fetched,
you know.
Yeah. We're a lot more stupid than we were in the 80s.
Yeah, but
President Mike Pence. President Mike Pence.
Oh God.
We have a raging AIDS epidemic, think about Mike Pence as president in the 1980s. It's not far fetched to think that, you know, homosexuality is outlawed. I could envision that.
I know. Back in the days where they were calling it the gay cancer, and people didn't know how it was really spreading, but it seemed to be only gay men were catching it. But the thing was, there was not an absolute scientific cause and effect that was provable at that point. So I doubt that. I don't see that is exactly the same as
but take it for people don't believe science anymore.
But the thing about
it
was,
I know they don't.
The thing about it was is that it was contained to a community.
Well, this is more or less contained to a community.
No, it's absolutely not.
It's not.
Well,
it's
AIDS,
not.
AIDS
not anymore.
No, AIDS was not. You got to remember, at the time, people thought if somebody sneezes and you have AIDS, you can catch it. So you're using what we know now.
Yeah.
About the AIDS epidemic in the 80s.
No, we didn't know how it was spread.
That's exactly right. So it's not.
But even still, back then, there was the thought of it was pretty much a gay health issue.
Right, but you could get it by not.
But what we did was we tried to understand it and take the steps to be careful of it.
Right,
we didn't.
You're looking at it through what happened. What I'm telling you is, think about if you have a religious nut who's anti-gay, who tries to convert people like Mike Pence as president, and you have something known as the gay cancer. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. In my mind, it's not.
But you want to know something today? Speaking of today, there's so many people calling bullshit on everything that couldn't happen.
I agree. I understand and agree with you that in today's climate, it's more likely that there could be a slippery slope. But I would hope that cooler heads would prevail and stick to the fact of provable, documentable reasons why something can be contained by a vaccine.
We have anti-vaxxers now who don't believe this. We have people running around who believe in flat Earth. We have people running around who don't see climate change.
I know they exist, but they're not in the majority.
But the way you said it, there's people running around like nuts. They're nuts.
Yeah,
they're nuts.
They're in office. They're in office. They're fucking nuts. Other nuts vote them in. That's how this shit works.
I just hope that we won't get to a point like that.
I'm saying it could happen. I could see it. Slippery slope.
It could.
Right.
So it could.
That's what I'm saying. When you start doing things for the public health, and like I said, I agree with it. I think Cuomo did the right thing.
Absolutely.
But I can see the downside.
I know, but there are always things that are done for public health.
No,
there are always things done for emergencies, for public health. There are always measures passed because it's prudent for the public health at that moment. It doesn't mean that
crazy things couldn't be passed. Public health says women's health care is fucking important. Yet, we have a large faction of the country who wants to stop funding women's health care. Where they conflate abortion with all of what Planned Parenthood does.
Maybe it's the way I'm using it. Public health emergency.
But you got to remember, on the opposite side, a reaction to that is on the pro-life people, especially ironically Cuomo, changing the late term that you can have an abortion.
That's different. But
it's not different. It's a log on the fire stoking that flame.
Yeah, they were thinking the way they did about closing Planned Parenthood long before Cuomo stuck his toe in the water.
But like I'm saying, it was always there. And it was always, you know, it was always kind of contained. But now with the late term abortion, that is a big log on the fire, you know, for the pro-life movement.
For people who think that it's a public health emergency to keep babies from dying, they're like, it's emergent. But there are too many other factors. It's too complicated. It's a big onion of an issue.
Yeah.
This is pretty clear cut. You don't get a vaccine, you are getting measles, and you're spreading
it's spreading to outside the community, and it's spreading at an epidemic level. We do respect religious rights, but this is made for the betterment of the masses.
Yes, because measles just doesn't...
Religious freedom is in the Constitution. Public health is not.
No, it's not in the Constitution,
I know.
If
you're a constitutionalist,
right,
so many claim they are, if you're a constitutionalist, this is an outrage. I'm just playing devil's advocate there.
No, I understand what you're saying, but the thing is, measles doesn't spread in a chain. It spreads exponentially. And so I think that he absolutely had to step in and say, no matter what you think, right now you are a danger to yourself and others.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to drunks in the news.
Welcome to Drunks in the News.
Benjamin Franklin drinking term. As we know, our great founding father had a bunch of terms for being drunk, and this week's is wet both eyes. I don't know what the fuck that means.
Somebody licking your eyelids again?
I think that's kinky.
Wet both eyes.
You got so much booze in you, it's floating up to your eyeballs.
Oh, there's a good point. Yeah, I like that.
All right. Cops are investigating whether at least, it's up to nine now, tourists who mysteriously died in the Dominican Republic were poisoned by counterfeit booze. Officials want to know who supplied the alcoholic beverages the victims drank in the minutes and hours before their deaths over the past year, and if the drinks had any dangerous chemicals in them, law enforcement said. The FBI is assisting and will take blood samples from the dead back to its research center in Quantico. The Dominican government insists the fatalities are isolated incidents, or reps for both of the resorts where victims have died, and there's more now. The Hard Rock Hotel and Casino and Bahia Principe describe the deaths as simple accidents. But most of the deaths bear similarities as they involve apparently healthy adults, at least some of them who drank from the hotel room minibar before suddenly becoming greatly sick. Five American tourists have died in mysterious circumstances on the island this year. Again, I think that number's high.
I think it's nine. Didn't you just say it's nine now?
Yeah.
It's nine now, yeah.
Others have reported ill, but some have survived from drinking from minibars. A Post reporter at one of the resorts noted the vodka in the room had a strange potent smell resembling pure alcohol. What research he was doing. Lawrence Kobolinski, a forensic science professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in Manhattan, said the symptoms among some of the dead, including nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, were consistent with poisoning from methanol or pesticides. Methanol is a type of alcohol not safe for humans, is regularly used in antifreeze. Adulterated alcohol is usually methanol added to alcohol or just plain methanol, which is very toxic. So it looks to me, from what I've heard, is read that something was added to the drinks or bottles in those refrigerators. There should not be any methanol at all. So this is a big problem for the Dominican Republic.
Oopsie.
They make a lot of their money from tourism. Do you guys drink from the minibar?
No.
It's so expensive.
Jesus Christ, no.
I would think I could tell if a bottle was open, though.
Yeah, because even those the little snaps across the top.
Yeah, exactly.
Go snap, snap,
yeah.
Snap.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't happen, you don't even think about what you do. But if it doesn't happen, you go, wait, something's funny. It's like when you open a Snapple and it doesn't go pop. You go, what the hell?
I'm afraid to.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh. He eats a tuna sandwich that thinks it tastes funny.
Oh, no.
Hey, if I can find a tuna sandwich, I'm going to eat a tuna sandwich.
I found one in Michigan one time.
Sounds dirty.
Like if alcohol smelled funny, I would probably still drink it.
Really?
I'm too trusting.
What about a beer?
I would probably think, oh, this was different.
Because I was at the gig with the band 2 weeks ago, and I got, a Blue Moon, and I took a sip. I'm like, yeah.
Oh, really?
I flew at PBR. Yeah.
If it tastes bad, I'm not going to drink it.
All right.
Right.
Okay.
If it smells bad, I don't know if I would know.
Because I'm not an alcohol expert. I don't know if I would sniff it and go, oh, antifreeze. I don't know. Holy crap.
The Majorska.
Majorska, what the hell is that?
Exactly. Yeah, it was cheap vodka.
Oh, yeah.
And you put it in a Dixie cup, and after not too long, you wouldn't have a bottom of a Dixie cup.
No way!
Oh, what was the shit we drank up in Maine? Schmoorroff. I used to do that. Joe, what are we drinking tonight? Forgot the name.
Yeah, we do drink awful things.
I trust the resort. I assume
you're hard, right? You trust that you get top shelf in the mini bar.
Yeah.
In the mini bar, they're trying to fuck you like a teenage runaway, so they always have top shelf in there. You know?
Yes.
I would not
feel comfortable until they got this sorted.
When Mexico started having all the problems with the drug cartels.
Yeah.
Decade,
yep.
I did not go back to Cancun. I'm like, you know what? Not safe. Don't need to go.
Don't need to do that. Yeah, no, there's a lot of places that it's like, oh, I like to look at the watch list and look at what, oh, these are countries that are having internal.
Yeah, when it went from Cancun to can be captured and killed, we're not going no more.
Yeah, well, when they think that, Americans, they go, oh, yeah, they've got money. It's like, not really.
Thank you, no.
yeah, I don't think I'll be going to the Dominican Republic. I think that's permanently crossed off. Not that I want to go.
No, but just that's permanently crossed off?
I think so. I think I'm done.
Things change. I mean, I would love to go to Egypt, but that's such a mess. I don't feel like going there now. But yeah,
I had a chance
too.
To go when I was a kid.
To Egypt?
Yeah, my friend, one of my mom's close friends was Egyptian and was part of Egyptian royal family back then. I had a chance to go to Egypt. My mom wouldn't let me go.
An Egyptian man with a young boy. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, but was it an Egyptian woman?
That was an Egyptian woman.
Yeah, and her family. Yeah, very nice people.
Maybe you could have done her in her space.
Oh God!
What?
I'm
sure, they had two. Anyway,
all right, let's. I can't give you a really on that. That's funny.
listen, we are compassionate folks. We know the Dominican Republic relies on tourism dollars, American tourism dollars, to help their economy.
Absolutely.
We don't want to see them fail. So we came up with some slogans, some ideas, some advertising ideas to help them stay afloat. Pip, why don't you start us off with your first one?
Well, Five Star Resorts is pleased to offer a special offer for our plush Dominican Republican property. Now you can come stay with us for half price our normal rates. Our slashed fees reflect our new BYOB policy. We're happy to reimburse our customers for all the duty-free liquor purchases you bring it to the island. Additional discounts are available for all guests who will be able to bring their own mini bar refills, water filtration systems, and liquor stills.
Come to the Dominican Republic, a vacation where you'll never want to go home, and you won't.
Yeah. Stay at the Hard Rock Cafe, all-inclusive resort in the Dominican Republic. Everything is including funeral expenses.
Oh, God.
And if you die at the Hard Rock, your family gets a three-night vacation for free on us.
Oh, God.
I'm trying to help.
There you go.
All right, pick your last one.
Dominican Republic Airlines now offering trips to everywhere but the Dominican Republic because, hey, we don't want to die when... there either. Enjoy your new our new excursion packages while flying in our bulletproof airplanes to anywhere else but the Dominican Republic. Have a great flight to a country where your final destination isn't your final destination.
Come to the Dominican Republic. Your shot at adventure. And our shot at you.
Sounds like Ghana's
going
to lord
it. It does, yeah.
The Hard Rock Cafe in the Dominican Republic is the most authentic rock vacation you can have. Not only will you be surrounded by one-of-a-kind artifacts from rock and roll history, but you can party like a rock star as the drinks flow freely. And the Hard Rock is the only resort where you can not only party like a rock star, but you can die like a rock star due to organ failure. So come to the Dominican Republic and take a detour from that highway to hell and party like AC/DC and die like Bon Scott.
You can die like a rock star as well.
You like it?
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a very short break, play one song, and then we're going to come back with some scamming. What the fuck are we doing? Scam busters. Don't go anywhere.